Ranch Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and curly stands, the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Sirius XM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour three, about 10 minutes in, and as promised. And I saw this coming yesterday when I talked about Kate DeMassey's seemingly promising player for Pewter Stable in the nursery, winning time, two for two, and kind of cruised home. There was an oncoming horse, but this race was over, and Kate DeMassey joins us because, Kate, if I didn't have you on, Woodbury Payne would hit me over the head. He'd say, why didn't you have Kate DeMassey on? Congratulations. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. And actually, Woodbury texted me, too. He was congratulating me because he had actually had some wind chills for us a few years back, legging them up. And he said, these babies all have great brains on them. I think you're going to do really well with this stallion. And he's been so right.
Well, that's one of the really fun parts of this story, because I heard from Ed Pugh this morning, and I could tell, and of course they're excited at Pewter, but this is really a when you talk about homebreds, this is really a homebred.
Absolutely, and I don't know if you picked up on the story that the groom actually rubbed the dam and the sire, so, you know, that's how much in the family this is, yes. So it was really, like he said, today was a great day. He was just over the moon, you know. So he's been with me a long time.
I love it. And it give us a feel for, you know, how quickly you had a feeling that this was a nice horse. Because that debut, which, you know, not only earned an 82 buyer, romping by 11, this was at Parks on November 7th, just 3 weeks earlier, but on Thoroughgraph, a 5.25, and that makes this, you know, more than a nice Pennsylvania bred.
Yeah, you know, he was very small and immature earlier on in the year, and so we gave him quite a bit of time, so he's really, in the last 3 months, just grown by leaps and bounds. I mean, he's still a small horse in comparison to some of the horses that he ran against yesterday, but he's just, you know, he showed some talent early on, but he just was very immature. You know, his butt was high, his withers are down low, and he just needed a little chance to kind of catch up to himself. So I was glad that, you know, we were able to do right by him, and he's certainly done right by us. So yeah, and I thought when we were wheeling him back, we kind of figured, let's take a shot, because honest to Pete, he came out of the race so good. I'm like, I guess if we're ever going to do it, let's do it, you know. But, you know, especially off of a big win first time out, you're eligible to bounce and all that kind of good stuff. So, I mean, I was just, you know, really thrilled with, you know, how we performed yesterday.
Well, and, you know, you drew outside, but going 7/8, that's not a negative necessarily. But what were your thoughts, you know, the way this field? Because we had Butch Reed on Monday, and we talked about both the race previous, the Future Star race, and this, where, you know, where Butchie, you know, figured prominently with 90% Maddie. And he said, this group, and listen, it's 200,000, Kate.
Yes.
Why shouldn't there be, you know, nice horses, you know, targeting?
Well, exactly. And, you know, I thought the race overall came up very, very competitive. I mean, you know, you'll get one or two standouts, but there was a lot of nice young horses in here with very good records and obviously coming in off of one win, one race. And young horses, you know, we always jokingly say, you know, the first time they don't know what's happening, the second time they know what they're there for, so they usually act up. And this guy walked into the paddock like, been doing this a long time. And I'm like, hey, I love it. You know, he just really seemed to be super professional. And, you know, what he did yesterday, you know, dueling with another horse and then putting him away and then resisting him. I mean, he acts like he's run three or four times already. So just it's thrilling to have a horse like that.
Amazing. And as we mentioned, Windchill, the stallion, the dam, Merry Pegasus, which I think is third generation training dam for Pewter, and or at least there's been, what, this is the third generation that you've trained of this family.
Yes. So Merry Princess was a really super nice 5-furlong turf filly, and then her foal was Merry Pegasus, who produced this guy. You know, so she's been a super honest brood mare for us. And he's a full brother and word on a wing. We have a couple other siblings coming along. So really exciting for the pedigree, because we have a lot of that family, because we have a lot of the half-sisters. We have, you know, out of that same Merry Princess dam line. So it's just been a really honest line. And Winchell, you know, like I said yesterday, he's thrown such a nice, brained individual. And they just seem to have that attitude of, I'm going to go out here and do my job, you know?
Well, and that's half the battle, actually. When you've got one that, you know, and as it happens, isn't he a Tappet, Winchell?
Yeah, he's a Tappet. But he doesn't have the, you know, I know Tappets, you kind of get some, they're a little bit high temperament. And he was just so professional as a racehorse. He was just, you know, he was never fazed by anything.
Well,
I think his babies are getting that, you know, that attitude. They just take everything in stride. Good work ethic.
Well, this gets us to something. We'll come back to what might lie ahead for Winning Time, but we are going to visit the Kate DeMasi story, as we like to call it. I don't know if you heard me earlier this morning, but I did refer to you as the Mid-Atlantic Kathleen O'Connell.
Okay, I'll take that.
Right? Is it?
I didn't hear that earlier, but I'll take that.
Because there is a parallel, Kate. I mean, you've won. If I was to put a thing out on Twitter, and of course everybody can, you know, if they're on Twitter, that means they're on the computer, they can look it up. For those of you out there, we're going to play a game. I'm going to say to you, how many wins do you think Kate DeMasi has in her career? And I'll say 500 to 1,000, 1,000 to 1,500, or 1,500 and above. So everybody take that in and say to yourself, oh, she's, you know, Kate's been around. 1,600 wins.
Yeah. It's been a milestone. That's for sure. I'm closing. I keep saying, well, we're closing in on the gap of the big two.
You know, you just operate very quietly. And what, you know, what's amazing is that you mentioned Merry Princess, who, if I think back, Who was the you just had at Pimlico on Preakness? Was it like was
yeah,
it last
it was,
year? Who was it the
it
other
was,
day?
It wasn't last year, but we had a horse named Everything Lovely.
Okay.
And she won the Very One Stakes, and so did
Mary Princess.
Yeah. And Mary Princess was the filly that we took her all the way out to Kentucky to run in the Mamzelle, and I couldn't bring myself to run her at Thorne all day long. And she was coming off of a long hiatus. It was the first turf season, turf race, you know, for the season. And I scratched her and ran her 2 weeks later on Preakness Day in the Very One. And it was so validating because she shot through on the rail and won going away with Ramon Dominguez. So like I said, you know, after going all the way to Kentucky to scratch, you know, be able to win 2 weeks later, it was great.
That happens. One of her 11 wins, I just pulled it up, and interestingly, that was the only time Ramon ever rode her.
Yes. Mary seemed to get a lot of different riders because that Mid-Atlantic region at the time had a lot of great turf sprint fillies, and you kind of went wherever the races went. Mary Opino won easily on her down at Colonial Downs that same year, I believe. And it was like, yeah, it's like whatever you rode, whatever top turf rider was at the meet, because, you know, you couldn't really follow those races because they were all over the place, you know.
I've got to ask you, because she and you rode a jock who Kate, I have no recollection of
Arnaldo?
Yeah, Eunice Awaya?
I forget how you say his name. I think they said Unishe back then.
Okay.
And, I don't even know what ever happened to that rider. But he was a good, quiet little rider, and he rode around Philadelphia Park at the time, before we were called parks. And that was when they had the Atlantic City meet. You know, they'd have like those 2 weeks or something towards the end of April, I believe. And I guess it was just the way the rider, you know, he was worked her a few times, and one day she worked in like 33 and change. And I was like, holy smokes, you know, so she could fly. But when we got her on the grass, she was, it just kept her a lot sounder. I don't think she would have stayed as sound on the dirt. You know, she just, was cat hop on the turf.
There's a bunch of things about that horse, and she's one of your biggest earners. And she earned $319,000 with those 11 wins and 25 starts. Elizabeth Hendricks bred her.
Yes. And we bought her for a ham sandwich. We bought her out of a yearling sale. She turned out, you know, she was very incorrect. We loved Polish numbers. And we'd had success with them, and we bought her, and she turned out to be really special. And it was kind of nice because, you know, Liz was the breeder, so she, you know, got breeders awards. And we ended up buying another mare out of that same family and did well for us. And, you know, so it's a real running family.
Unbelievable. Well, we will get the story. We will get the story about Unsawaya from Tony Black tomorrow.
There you go, Tony Black. Yes.
Tony's got the Rolodex of every jock who's ever come in the room, because of course there's very few that pass through parks and Philadelphia Park that he didn't put in the rail at least once or twice. So Tony will give us the 411 on Unsawaya.
Yeah, there you go. And he was, like I said, he was a real quiet kind of fellow, but he was very patient. He was good on turf. He was just, you know, he's a good little rider around here at that time. And he'll give you the 411 absolutely.
Well, and I've got the tie with Liz Hendricks. The parallel to some degree is the horse that won the turf sprint this year, Caravelle.
Oh, Caravelle. What? I mean, yeah, I texted her after the race. I mean, how awesome was that? I mean, it's like, just it takes your breath away when you have a homebred. I mean, anybody who breeds horses knows it just, you know, there's a lot that can go right and there's a lot that can go wrong. So when you can see the fruits of your labors come to fruition and out there and doing that, I just, you know, it's just amazing. You know, it's, and you know, it's for some of us, like our kids, you know, but it's just, and like I say, you bring them along and you have to stop and you have to start over, you know, because, you know, they're growing or they have an injury or whatever it is. And just to see that. So, I mean, yeah, I can't imagine how it feels to have a horse that wins the Breeders' Cup. So just, she's amazing.
Yeah, it's also a tribute to the Mid-Atlantic, you know, to the horsemanship and the savvy of, you know, well, families like Hendricks, Merriman, etc. And I, you know, Kate, one other reason for the call, in addition to thinking that you've really got a nice one here, 2-for-2 winning time, with that win yesterday, and I don't know if you're aware of this, you realize this is now your best year as a trainer in earnings.
Yeah, you know, I actually had one of my owners who texted me that this morning. And, you know, I'm sure as most of us trainers, we really don't like to look at the numbers because we're afraid what might happen if we do. But, yeah, I guess this is a breakout year, and I'm still scratching my head because, you know, it's a tribute to the post structures, too. I mean, and especially when you're breeding, you know, like we have PA breads, you're running for extra money in the state and stuff. So, and back to Mary Princess, you know, none of that money was around, you know, slots and stuff. That 300 and some thousand she made was, you know, pre Smarty Jones slot era. So that's saying something, you know, back in those days. In fact, somebody was showing me a win photo the other day. And the purse was like, I don't know, $6,000.
Yeah. Yeah.
You've got to be kidding.
Exactly.
It was an old photo, needless to say, but still, I can remember the days of, you know, even Gardens Bank Park, the purses were like $7,000, I think, was like a maiden special week.
Well, yeah, it's funny. It's funny for you to call it a breakthrough. Yeah, you're an overnight success in 35 years.
Yeah, we've been doing this a while.
take a minute and talk about your start and coming to the racetrack.
Well, I grew up in Maryland, and I grew up on a farm, not really raising horses per se. So my family still to this day have, you know, they grow corn and soybeans and stuff like that, you know, so. But I was always very involved with horses. So my parents had a couple cheap horses at the time. So I kind of got bit with the racetrack bug and worked summers. And the next thing you're working full time at the track. And, you know, it just kind of snowballed from there. So, you know, I'm like so many other people that, you know, they come to the racetrack and they never leave. Hmm. There was a lady that worked in the same barn because I worked for Richard Dutrow Sr. And there was a lady in the barn that actually quit her office job just to rub horses. She loved horses. Rubbed a lot of nice horses over the years, too. So it was just kind of funny when you think back about, like, the people that come into the industry or, you know, that they're doing these kinds of jobs and stuff like that. I'll never forget that. Quit her office job to come rub horses on the racetrack.
Well, usually the transition is the other way. You start out rubbing horses or as an exercise rider. You think about Denise Stampinato in New York, who's the horseman's bookkeeper, you know, the head of the office, and she rode in the mornings for Woody Stevens, and then eventually, you know, started working in the afternoons in an office, and then, you know, and in fact, if I'm not mistaken, Woody. She told me the story once, what he said to her, you know, time for you to stop coming around at 4:30 and, you know, make the decision to work in that office from now on. And you know, she's the head of New York's bookkeeping office. So it is, that's unusual to leave the office and come down to rub and walk. That's great.
Right. Yeah. So it's and it's interesting too, because one of my assistants, that works for me at Monmouth, and you know, he's been helping me out a lot, and he actually did a lot of the you know, getting this horse legged up this summer. He used to gallop horses back in the day, back in the, you know, 70s and 80s, you know, before he went out training too. So it was just funny because he worked for a lot of the Maryland trainers back in that era, you know, Spectacular Bid and all those kind of good horses that were coming out of there at that time. So, yeah, this is, you know, when you step back into that time frame, it seems like it wasn't that long ago, but then you look at it and go, oh my God, that's a long time.
Well, yeah, you know, and you're, in terms of your, you know, professional career side, I mean, it seems like it started in the early 90s. I mean, you were starting handfuls of horses as far back as 1984.
Yeah, that's when I took out my trainer's license. But, you know, just like anything else, unless you, you know, really get lucky and some owner hands you a bunch of resources or something, which is highly unusual, at least it's particularly back in those times. And being a girl, I think, too, you know, you just, you know, you take the few that you have and you try to do what you can with them. And, you know, a lot of us all started out as a small trainer. So, you know, you kind of, you learn along the way what works for you and what doesn't in terms of, you know, your training styles. People always say I have turf horses, but I don't know. I think they sort of come to me.
Yeah.
They just, I don't know if it's just the horses we're looking at, you know, when you go to the sales or what, but it, yeah, I do. And I guess maybe I'm a little more apt to try a horse on the grass when some people wouldn't, you know. So like Joya Real might have been the other horse you were talking about.
Yeah.
And she was a nice turf horse that it was like she was out of conditions on the dirt and I couldn't find a race for her, so I put her in a turf race and the rest is history. She became a stake, multiple stakes winner on the grass. But you know, so I think it's just you know, you kind of have to throw a few things in the air sometimes and try them.
Well, that's it. And you can sometimes you look at PPs and you see that, you know, that a trainer is trying to figure out what, you know, what course of action, you know, what the horse is, long, short, turf, dirt, you know, trying different things until you find out what they are. And, you know, then all of a sudden, you know, there's also development too, and going back to something that they weren't necessarily ready for as a young horse.
Oh, isn't that the truth? Yeah, that seems like it happens a lot. You just kind of go back to square one and go, you know, let's just give them some time, let's bring them back, and maybe they'll, you know, show a glimmer of what they were before. And I would say probably 65% of the time that works. You know, the rest of the time maybe they just, you know, maybe they were just early horses and, you know, don't go on, or maybe they're horses that need more time. Like we've had some of those homebreds that we've had that just, I kept saying, you know, I think they're going to get better with age. And they have, you know, some of those partners, heroes, they run till they're 7, 8 years old.
Yeah.
They would just get better and better and better. You know, I think that the, it seemed like a lot of those factor horses, the babies by the factor, they would come to hand really early, but they got better with age if you could just give them enough time to mature.
Yeah, and
they would just be really, you know, really reliable horses for you.
That's the challenge. The challenge, especially if you've got an owner that in question in this, you know, that doesn't necessarily want instant gratification, but just is not going to tread water along with you, you know, they're gonna say, get rid of them,
yeah,
drop them in, and you then you got to watch it become a 5, 6, 7 year old, and watch Chuck Lawrence win with them, win graded stakes with them at 6 and 7.
Right, exactly. I mean, think about it. It's just like people. It's like not everybody's cut out to be a super young athlete. Sometimes they just need a chance to, you know, mentally mature as well.
Yep,
so.
No doubt. Well, you've got, you've got something here in Winning Time that, you know, long term, and this is a colt for now, but you think about Dabini recent years.
Yep.
Got to be excited to have a horse like this. What, you know, how much more, you know, you got the opportunity to run at Philly all winter, I suppose. So he doesn't necessarily need a turnout.
No, but I think a lot of our young horses, we do tend to, you know, give them that little break in January and February where your weather's so inconsistent, because there's so many more opportunities, you know, as the, you know, you have all the tracks during the summertime, you know, so you want to, you kind of, I think it's hard for a horse to run year round, especially a young horse, you know. Some of those older horses, you know, maybe, you know, can give them their little break in between races and stuff. But, you know, well, I don't know where we'll be, you know, over the next few months with him right now, but I don't think probably running him through the winter is necessarily what, because we're not people who are going to, you know, we like to support the program.
So. Well, certainly, you know, certainly an opportunity like yesterday, the Pennsylvania Nursery, $200,000 win, and winning time, 2 for 2, and clearly an exciting horse to follow going forward into 2023. And Kate, is there any other harboring star that we should know about?
No, I don't think so.
This is the big one.
No, I think he's the special one of the group. But we've had a couple really do very well. So, I mean, and I've had some homebreds for some other Pennsylvania breeders that have done really super well this year. So, it's really gratifying to see that, because, like I said, as a breeder, you hope you get a runner after all that you put into it. So,
oh, let me ask you about the Shooting Star PA bred. Uncle Lino, I've got tremendous affection for, because Gary Sherlock, one of my favorite people that I've gotten, I had the privilege to get to know. And so I'm always rooting for Uncle Lino. And you got a 3-year-old, this One More Scoop that broke the maiden a little bit ago.
Yes. Yes. Well, I like him. And I think he's still learning, believe it or not. I think he's still kind of green and still figuring it out. So I hope he gets better. I was tickled with the way he ran the other day. And there's a full sibling, the Cinnabunny, that ran.
Oh, yeah.
I think that horse needs longer. He's going to be better, I think, when he can go 2 turns. And I'm toying with maybe putting some blinkers on him as well. He's just kind of a big, you know, baby Huey mentally right now. So he's just figuring it out. So both those horses, I think, should be useful horses for Shooting Star. And they've been super patient, super owners, super breeders. And they've had that wonderful little filly, Golden Tabby, that, you know, she's, I think she's won 6 races and she's only 3 years old. So, I mean, she's done really well too for them. So can't take anything away from a little tabby.
Nice. And I suppose related to the other tabby?
She is Celtic Tiger that just broke her maiden a few weeks ago. She, on the same day, I think, that Winning Time won.
Nice.
She broke her maiden that day, and she's a half-sister to Golden Tabby. Golden Tabby is a golden lad, also a PA bred. And we actually have a film right here in front of me, and I was just looking at it. Yeah, so she's won 6 of 9 lifetime starts.
Wow.
How can you knock that? Right?
No, that's a horse that quote unquote likes to win.
Likes to win.
Right? And and Kate DeMassey likes to win 1,600 plus, and moving toward 2,000. You know, probably 3 years, probably, yeah, how many, yeah, probably 3.5 years, right?
I guess so, anyway, right?
Well, you're averaging 65, 75 a year, so just keep grinding it out. Kate, always a delight and a pleasure to congratulate you and the Pewter people here, in particular with Winning Time, continued success.
Well, thank you so much, and I really appreciate, talking with you, and Hope everybody has a great holiday and a healthy holiday, too.
I appreciate that. Kate DeMasi, folks, one of the real stalwarts in the Mid-Atlantic. Just very, like we said, I mean, think about her and Kathleen O'Connell and the thousands of races that they win, and they have been winning for a long time, and can win with any kind of horse. Speaking of which, Mark Glatt is going to join us next. And Mark Glatt wins with all different kinds of horses. And in addition to talking about his weekend stake win in the red carpet, we're going to also have Mark pay tribute to Jed Cohen. And yesterday, Daryl Vienna joined us, and Mark wanted to take the opportunity to, haven't spoken to you too long, and wanted to take the opportunity to talk about the red carpet win with Bell Street Bridie. But you're one of the current trainers for Rancho Temescal, Red Baron's Barn, and I'm sure, like Daryl Vienna discussed yesterday, you found it a real privilege to work for Jed Cohen.
Yes, Jed was the best owner you could possibly train for.
Mark, did you get signed on about the same time that Daryl stepped away from training?
Yes, I did. There were a few trainers that met with Jed and his son Tim after Daryl had decided to retire from training horses, and I can remember it to this day. We had a meeting up at their ranch, and he gave us his background and, you know, his approach to the business, and, you know, I just kind of walked away remembering how passionate he was about horse racing, and that if I got an opportunity to train for him, what a privilege it would be.
Well, and, you know, most recently, Dr. Scheibel, right?
Yeah. Yes, we bought Dr. Scheibel after his first couple of races, and was able to negotiate a deal for part ownership of him, majority interest. Jed bought into him, and he turned out to be one heck of a horse. He got a quick return in the Del Mar Futurity that year, and then the horse needed some time off, and he came back and had an excellent three-year-old season, you know, capped off by just getting nailed in the Breeders' Cup Sprint last year.
Exactly. And then, of course, just the fact that Bell Street Bridie, the timing, one of those scenarios that you can't really make up.
No, you sure can't. You talk about a storybook ending. I believe that day of racing was the last day Jed was able to watch the races, and
wow.
he actually ran 1-2 in the red carpet, and then followed that up with a very nice maiden win in the last race of the day that day.
Yeah, and you know, Jeff Mullins, of course, this had association as well, and it really feels to me, I brought this up with you in recent years, Mark, that their operation has really expanded and grown, and their prominence on the circuit has grown in recent years.
Yeah, I mean, they'll do, you know, they approach the business in a number of different ways. You know, they'll buy two-year-olds in training. They have bred a few over the years. They, buy some cowbreds. And, of course, the biggest part of their operation are the European imports. And, you know, they've stepped that up numbers-wise and quality-wise over the last, you know, several years. And there just really isn't anything that they wouldn't do, you know, or there wasn't any approach that they wouldn't take to the game. They would buy a ready-made horse. They bought a couple of horses that became for sale in my barn. Sharp Samurai was, the most successful one out of the two or three that they bought. But they bought him as a three-year-old prior to him going on a big run in a 3-year-old year. And he won the La Jolla, and then he won the Del Mar Derby and came back and won the Twilight Derby at Santa Anita. And then, you know, ended up, running third in the, second in the Pacific Classic, and was third in the Breeders' Cup Mile. And so he was, a good horse that, like I said, came up through my barn, and horse came available, and Jed stepped right up and bought the horse.
I just couldn't, wasn't going to let the week proceed without proper appreciation for Jed Cohen and Daryl Vienna yesterday and Mark Glatt with us now. And specifics, let's talk about this win and this filly by Sir Percy. You had Flavian Pratt, who pretty much dominated the weekend at Del Mar, went off actually as, I think, like fourth choice, attended the pace and drew off.
She sure did. You know, she had just arrived here in the U.S., a week prior to the race. And you never know how them horses are going to ship and how they're going to do. And, I was back at Tattersalls this year for the first time, and Tim invited me along. And, you know, she was one of the first ones that we saw that, really, really got on, on our hit list. She was a very nice looking filly. Felt like firmer ground would probably make her even a better horse. And, to say I was surprised by that performance, I think, as easy as it was a bit surprising given everything she had gone through. She hadn't ran since October the 1st. There was some interruption with having to go through the sale and her training schedule. And we actually negotiated a deal with the people that we bought her from, to keep her in training with what our goal was. And they did a fantastic job for us. And she rolled in here, and believe me, she got into my barn on a Friday afternoon, and I was looking for really any kind of an excuse to, maybe not run her. And she just shipped in like she owned the place and really took to everything here. And I couldn't find that excuse not to run her. And, we thought she would run well in there. It was against older mares, and like I said, everything that she had to overcome to see her win that impressively and with relative ease was, it was an eye-opener.
How about that? There's some added backstory. So there's a lot to look forward to with her as we look toward Santa Anita.
Yeah, in the back of our minds when we decided to buy her, Tim decided to buy her, and Jed, we had the grade one, Oaks coming up here the day after Christmas. We felt like with a bit of improvement that she would, maybe be a competitive horse in that race. And certainly off of the red carpet win, we're feeling even better about giving the grade one a try. So that is hopefully, the next target race for her. She seems to have bounced out of it very well, as good as she went into the race. And so right now we're zeroed in on that race. And if she happens to, at least be 1, 2, 3, but actually jump up and win the race, that would be fantastic.
Well, already is, paid dividends winning the grade three. And some things to really look forward to. And she's got to be a hardy horse as well, no? I mean, look at, that was her 13th or 14th start.
Yes, she seems to be a very durable filly. I think that was one of the things that we paid attention to at the sale, that she looked very, very sound for a horse that had the campaign that she had to that point. And,
wow.
So we're looking forward to the Oaks, and maybe at some point she'll need a little breather because of that long campaign she's had. But right now we're zeroed in on that race.
Really nice. Well, Bell Street, Bridie, and then you mentioned the maiden win, which followed as well. This was on Thanksgiving. So kind of a nice, the wild grazer, a Gustav Klimt, not to be confused with just the regular Klimt. The two of them. The horse, though, that we've also got to talk about, Mark. I'm not. You're not going to get out of here without a discussion of Spun Intended going to Saturday and a absolutely impressive, romping winner, a 2-year-old with a big future.
Yes, he was. You know, he was bet down like, you know, a horse that couldn't lose, and we expected a strong effort. I was a little surprised he was able to maybe set those kind of fractions and, you know, finish up like he did and, you know, win with relative ease. And, you know, we thought he was a horse that could win first time out. Had a little bit of a tough trip first time, but we knew he ran well enough that with a little better trip second time out, that he would be awfully tough to beat. He's a horse that we purchased back at OBS March. We were able to give him a couple of months off after the sale, which I think is important for most of these young horses coming out of the sales. But the timing worked out, and you know, we picked him out. He'd made a little bit of a mistake in his Breeze show, and was a horse that, you know, is a big, he's a big colt. And, you know, I don't know why he, you know, didn't warrant a little bit more money, but we got him for a fair price. And he's just been straight and strong since he came into my barn in the middle of the summer. He never has missed a beat. And, you know, he's a good-minded colt. And I don't think the distance is going to, you know, going to be a factor. He has the, or stretching out's going to be much of a problem for him. He's got the pedigree to do so, and he's actually out of a, you know, was a really good race mare, and so he has a very bright future ahead of him.
Well, this is a $125,000 purchase, and Coffee Pot Stables sold this colt, and yeah, they're kind of an operation that I think keeps the fillies and sells the colts. Catman had that dam. I remember Floridora. That was Catalano. And this is a horse that was probably on some people's list. When you say he had a you know, a mistake in his Breeze, explain what happened that had some people probably bypass him.
Well, you know, as we do with most of the horses in the sale, where, you know, I'm paying attention or watching, you know, the Breeze show pretty closely, and he was a horse that was cruising along. I'm kind of a pretty big fan of Hard Spun to start with, and so he kind of got on my radar just looking at his page. So I'm watching the Breeze show, and he was cruising along very nicely, long stride, doing it easy. Very smooth for a big horse. And, you know, about mid-stretch, he'd switched leads properly. And then about mid-stretch, he jumped back over to his left lead and just hesitated a hair, but still went 10-1. And I'm thinking, if he doesn't pop back over to his left lead, this horse goes, you know, at least 10 flat, maybe he goes 9-4.
Wow.
And I'm not a big time guy anyway, you know, I know that's what sales, but I'm more interested in, you know, in how they do it and how they move and all of those things. So, you know, he Hard Spun's been a really good sire. You know, as these sires get a little older, they seem to fall out of favor a little bit. And I just thought he could fall into our price range. And he actually, we did not actually buy him out of the ring. He got up to somewhere in the neighborhood of $170,000 and was an RNA. And we just went back immediately to the barn after,
wow,
after he'd gone through the ring and made an offer, and they accepted.
Wow. unbelievable, and there's going to be people kicking themselves because this is obviously a serious three-year-old going forward. Spun intended, one of the impressive weekend performances coming out of the very good debut, as it happens. 86 buyer in the debut, 87 in the win. And how quickly will you move to two turns, or do you look at something like the San Vicente as an intermediate step? What's the thinking so far?
I think our gut feeling here initially after the race is to get him stretched out. I think we'll see how he bounces back. He's a pretty big, hardy horse, and we all have dreams, Derby dreams, and so. Getting him stretched out and getting him that two-turn experience sooner than later is probably what we're going to look to do. But I got to get with the ownership group and, kind of pencil in some spots or some possibles, and then we'll form a some sort of strategy from there to hopefully get him to the big show in the spring.
Well, and we should mention this is Edge Racing, right? Along with Muir Hut.
Correct. The horse was bought in partnership. Muir Hut's a client, and both of them are clients of mine. But they're kind of working together on a few purchases together. And Edge Racing is a branch of My Racehorse, and it's ran by Joe Moran, and I've known Joe. Trained for his father. I've known Joe for a number of years now, since he was about 5 years old. So we go back a long ways, and he's come a long ways in a short period of time in the business. And we're looking to do more and more business together, and hopefully it'll work out.
Outstanding. Spun intended. Keep an eye and put him on your watch list. And, I just talked to Kate DeMasi, as it happens, Mark, and you and Kate both shared an interesting weekend success. The stake win that she had yesterday in Philly, and the combination of the three wins you had over the weekend, both of you have officially now enjoyed the best year of your careers in terms of earnings. Congratulations.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Did you know that you had eclipsed that total for your earnings for the year?
Actually, I hadn't. It's a great accomplishment, and we just kind of put our heads down here and keep at it. And you hope one year from the next, you just get a little better and a little better. So that's fantastic. It's a tribute to, the people that are behind me that allow me to train their horses. And, we'll look to surpass it again next year.
Well, $3.8 million in earnings last year, $3.795 million. So you've got the month of December to try to break through the $4 million mark.
Okay, well we'll give it our best shot.
Well, you don't usually at this point. I ask about entries coming up. There's the weekend, the draw. Let's see, what's today? Wednesday. So they're drawing Saturday now. What's coming up that people should know about, Mark, out of the barn?
Well, we actually could have, if all the races go, we could have a big weekend this weekend. We have a horse called Spy Catcher pointing for the Hollywood Derby on Saturday.
Oh, yeah.
As well as a horse called What Makes Sammy Run.
I love one.
We're looking at the Stormy Liberal, although not as best distance. We may use it as a prep into a down-the-hill stake here on December 31st. And then I have another two-year-old colt to run in the Cecil DeMille, a very impressive maiden winner in his last start on Sunday amongst, some other horses to enter for the weekend. So we could have a number of them, and hopefully we have some luck this weekend.
Is that first piece?
That's his name, yes.
Yeah, first piece. Very good. So there you go, folks. First piece. What Makes Sammy Run? one of our favorites, and Spycatcher for the Hollywood Derby. So, Mark, there's a good chance I'm going to talk to you Monday.
Well, we can only hope so. Yeah,
right? You don't mind. You don't mind another callback.
Not at all.
And frankly, if you win a couple of those stakes, you'll eclipse that $4 million mark too. So get lucky. It's always a pleasure. I appreciate the opportunity to pay tribute to Jed as well.
Yeah, just, you know, the one thing I'd like for people to remember about Jed Cohen was, or is that he, you know, he cared, you know, if you were in his circle, he cared more about you as a person than really anything else. And he was the best to train for. You know, whenever a horse gets, you know, has an injury of some kind, or you gotta turn him out, you know, most trainers, we fret about having to make that phone call because it's disappointing news. But Jed was the type of, hey, you do what you gotta do and we'll just go get another one. Yeah. And to have that kind of support behind you, you know, you never really fretted about having to give Jed bad news. He accepted it well. He always wanted to be, you know, to have his horses treated the right way. And when they needed time, they got time.
Nice.
And,
nice.
You know, that's not always the easiest conversation to have. But he certainly made it a lot easier just because of his attitude.
Yeah, and Daryl Vienna echoed the same kind of thing. Mark Glatt, everybody. Mark, always a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mark
we'll
Glatt.
Talk to you soon.
You bet. I'll see you. I'll be out there 10 days.
Very good. Looking forward to it.
See you then early. See Mark and Jack Carava. First things you see at the Clocker's Corner, 4:20. In the morning. I love it. Let's wrap it up and send you into the race day. I want to thank Mark Glatt and Kate DeMasi. What a fun hour. And earlier, Sid and Dick. A big Wednesday. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to Brian for helping out, getting us started this morning. And Casey then going on with it. Back with you tomorrow, Thursday at the races. Thanks.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in...